From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, Uber and Lyft drivers and other so-called gig workers in California would be able to get together and negotiate wages and benefits under a new bill. But some in the tech industry say that's illegal and would hurt on-demand businesses that bring thousands of new jobs. We take up the debate. Then at 9:30, should California do away with daylight saving time? One San Jose lawmaker thinks so. He wants to put an initiative before voters that would end the twice-yearly ritual of adjusting our clocks. As we prepare to spring forward on Sunday, we look at the pros, cons, and history of daylight savings. That's all next on Forum. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez wants to make California the first state to allow gig workers to band together and negotiate for better working conditions. As millions of Americans join the on-demand sector, typified by platforms like Uber or TaskRabbit, it sparked a debate over how these contract workers should be classified and treated. We take up the question in this opening half hour of Forum. Let me tell you who's joining us. Lorena Gonzalez is an assemblywoman who represents San Diego. Good morning, Lorena Gonzalez.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. I'd also like to welcome Robert Callahan. He's the executive director of the Internet Association, which is a trade association that represents global internet companies. Good morning, Robert Callahan.
Good morning, Mina. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Assemblywoman Gonzalez, I'd like to start with you if I could. Your legislation would allow as few as 10 workers to join forces to negotiate with a company. Is that right?
It would, and although obviously the impetus for this is the changing innovative economy, this allows 10 workers in any sector who are independent contractors to come together, decide that they either want to negotiate or appoint an agent to negotiate on their behalf with a company, and would be able to do so on basic working conditions.
And why is this necessary, in your view?
Well, you know, I think obviously the economy is changing. We read about it every single day. I think businesses, both in the tech industry and others, have really changed their format. They've gone to this format of not direct employees, of independent contractors. And as a result, we have a ton of workers out there who have no real protections in the workplace. And so we said, you know, if our economy has changed and we, that's a good thing, that's okay, there's nothing wrong with that. We want to improve our innovative economy. Well, our labor laws have to change too. And that means that these workers have to have some ability to have a voice in the workplace. We could do it either through regulation or, my preferable method, through a free market approach that allows these workers to have a discussion with the employer about their wages and working conditions.
And Robert Callahan with the Internet Association, I imagine you are against this bill.
We certainly do have concerns. And, you know, I would say one of those is certainly what you mentioned already regarding the very small bargaining groups that would be created. And I think, you know, it's not just our sector, you know, representing the internet economy and really the internet sector, which has enabled so much of the gig economy so far. But this bill is admittedly very broad, and we sort of appreciate that acknowledgement. We are talking about independent contracting relationships across the board of the economy. Realtors, artists, plumbers, doctors, truck drivers, et cetera. So I think really when we look at the potential impact of the bill, it's enormous. It could be of a very high scale, and in an economy that seems to be firing on all cylinders with this 21st century opportunity that workers have to provide their services via internet-enabled technologies, I think, and it's providing such great benefits, that's something we want to approach with extreme caution.
But how specifically would it affect the companies that you represent?
Certainly. I mean, I think the bill specifically has a number of challenges, from administrative challenges to compliance challenges and, of course, you know, at the end of the day, legal challenges. If you consider that some of the most popular platforms for independent contractors today have as many as, you know, over 100,000 participants on them, you know, if you do the math on that, that could potentially, conceivably, be as many as 10,000 different bargaining units bargaining with that single company. And they would all potentially have very very unique demands and just the administrative requirements that would now be mandated by law on that company to negotiate and provide and comply with those requests and those compromises that would ultimately result would be a huge burden. And let's not forget that at the end of the day, that's time and resources and energy being taken away from what the companies are doing today, which is focusing relentlessly on innovation and improving the product, which benefits the worker and consumers and the economy.
Lorena Gonzalez, can I get you to respond to his concern about, you know, with some of these companies that employ hundreds of thousands of workers, groups of 10 would be, you know, would cause significant costs to go up for these businesses?
Of course, if you assume that, you know, that there's just going to be bargaining units of 10. We started this proposal very broad and, in fact, made it fairly easy for workers to come together and bargain. And that was on purpose. We know that we're going to go through a lot of hearings. We know that there's a lot of discussion to be had about this. But what we had heard after the Seattle attempt to do something similar is the companies didn't want to give up their list. You know, it's not a traditional workplace. It's not like you can go hang out outside the lunchroom and find out what a bargaining unit would be, like traditional labor organizing. So with the fact that you have 100,000, if you will, workers spread out throughout the state with different concerns, with different issues, it might be appropriate that you have smaller bargaining units. We started with 10. Are we flexible? Probably. We want to have this discussion, though, and we must remember that not all the platforms we're talking about are also 100,000 people. There's some that are smaller. We don't know at this point until we're conducting meetings now with startups and smaller companies, how do we get that sweet spot of numbers that makes it manageable for the workers to actually reach out and find other workers in the similar situation and make it manageable for innovation to continue, for startups to continue. So, we're working on this, and we'd love the cooperation of the tech industry. We don't think we'll get it, but we hope to, in order to find a situation that works for everybody. So, you know, there are a lot of options. They've said no to all of them, and now they're saying no to the bargaining unit. But I think it's a good start. You know, we can get 10 workers together. Obviously, it's better for the workers and better for the company if those bargaining units are larger. So maybe that provides an incentive on both counts to increase the bargaining unit. But it also allows people who are happy with the situation they're in, who have no problems with their working conditions, to never have to join a bargaining unit. This is different than traditional labor organizing. It's not a contract that would cover every worker. So we wanted to provide flexibility for workers who were not interested in changing the dynamic and for those who are.
We're talking about a proposal to allow gig workers like Uber drivers or freelancers to organize and negotiate wages and benefits. It's getting pushback from companies whose business models depend on independent contractors. What do you think? Should contractors be allowed to collectively bargain? Give us a call now with your thoughts or questions. The number is 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. Post your comments on Facebook, Twitter, or on our website, kqed.org/forum. Lorena Gonzalez, you bring up Seattle, and, you know, they did pass a city ordinance specific to for-hire drivers. So this isn't as broad as your legislation, which would apply to, say, truck drivers or freelancers or anybody who operates as independent contractors.
I just want to be clear. Anyone who operates as independent contractors with an employer who puts them in touch with the client.
I see. And, you know, in Seattle right now, they are facing a lawsuit from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that is basically arguing that, that, you know, these independent contractors are viewed as businesses under the U.S. law. And so, you know, bringing them all together would violate antitrust laws. So are you setting us up for a potential lawsuit here?
I think there's a big difference between Seattle and California. Seattle's a city and California is a state. And I think anyone that wants to bring up the antitrust issues, they know that there's state action immunity for antitrust. Parker v. Brown was very clear on what it takes to ensure that a state can actively supersede antitrust laws. We're allowed to do it. It's a two-part test. This bill would satisfy that test. It would allow for active supervision by the state. That is one of the requirements, and the other is a policy goal that we are trying to achieve. So I think it's clear. You know, Seattle has some additional hurdles because it's a municipality trying to say that they have the right to do this. Parker v. Brown was very clear that a state does have the right to do it, and it's been upheld time and time again in the courts.
Robert Callahan, do you want to weigh in on this? Do you feel like, yes, nonetheless, you know, this is still an open legal question. And just because what's happening in Seattle is happening there doesn't mean that it'll happen in California.
Certainly, it's an open legal question, and you know the legal outcome of this is a long ways down the road. But I do think it's murky waters at best legally for this bill. And we have heard. I'm not an antitrust lawyer, but we've heard those concerns raised. Antitrust law exists to prevent, you know, consumers from being harmed from any competitive sort of agreements amongst businesses or independent contractors as well. And I think, you know, you can imagine a scenario, it may seem far-fetched, but under the bill it seems possible. You could have plumbers agreeing, you know, not to do house calls for less than $500. You could have realtors negotiating that their percentage take will be no less than 10%. I mean, these are scenarios that are possible under the bill. And, you know, and frankly, we're trying to examine what the true impact of the bill is going to be first and foremost on the companies. But you have to imagine there's going to be some significant legal questions going forward.
Well, a listener writes, gig work turns humans into insects, just as ants are always scurrying about trying to do their unending tasks before they die. So gig workers are constantly in motion trying to make ends meet and burning out. The gig economy is about the insectification of hapless humans by the rich, who present themselves as Silicon Valley innovators, but who are actually just heartless parasites and exploiters of the poor. Some strong emotions there. Let's go to Amanda in Los Angeles. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Go ahead.
Well, I'm a consultant. I'm a contractor. I'm essentially a gig worker. I depend on that kind of work for my full salary. And I think that this sounds to me like a broad brushstroke that would impact my ability to find work. So in the way that it's being explained, I'm against it. I think for people like the Uber drivers, potentially that could be really impactful and lovely for them. But I think ultimately companies don't want to have to deal with something like this every time they hire a contractor. And so for me, in my line of work, I would be completely against it because it doesn't make sense. The whole point of hiring somebody in this way is to minimize costs, minimize the paperwork, minimize the liability. And that gives me an opportunity as a mom who wants to be a part-time contributor in the world to do some really great things both for myself mentally and for my family and for the companies that I impact.
And Amanda, do you mind, could you share with us what kind of consulting work you do?
I do consulting work around training and implementation in an HR sense. Hmm. So I'm actually on the HR side. I see the paperwork. I see how consultants impact things. And so for me, training in HR consulting, I value my opportunities to do this on a part-time gig basis, but I know from the inside that this is a huge burden to put on companies.
Thanks, Amanda. Thank you. Lorena Gonzalez, do you want to respond to that concern that, yes, in fact, it will reduce the available jobs?
I think that's not true because these jobs still have to get done. It's a matter of whether companies decide to do this via independent contractor or via employee. The independent contractor route has been taken up by so many employers because they do save. They save because they're not contributing to workers' compensation. They save because they're not contributing to unemployment insurance, Social Security, health care. And these are things that the state ends up having to pick up. So it's not like these workers are totally unprotected because we have a safety net, but we can't continue to have taxpayers pick up that which companies should. Mm-hmm. Now, in her particular situation, it would require that a company with our starting point would have to have 10 of these same type of consultants doing the same work for their company. I would question if you had 10 HR consultants doing training, perhaps you've totally outsourced your HR department, but, you know, it would have to be a very large company. And, yeah, they would have to make that decision. Do they want to bring people in-house or continue with independent contractors? But we started this bill so broad so that we can talk to as many folks as possible, both employers and employees, and say, how do we narrow this so that we get and encompass those workers that we need to and not inappropriately encompass others? You know, we didn't intend to start this off by having real estate agents unionize. You know, that may or may not be appropriate, but that wasn't our intent. What we want to do is start broad enough so that we can work through these different industries and figure out who is the most appropriate to be covered by the statute, and that's where we're going to go.
All right. Well, let's go to Sam in San Jose. Hi, Sam.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. So my question is that the gentleman said that one of the risks of this legislation is that there be potentially 10,000 different groups that the companies had to bargain with. but independent contractors can generally negotiate for their wages. So wouldn't dealing with 10,000 groups of 10 individuals be less burdensome than dealing with 100,000 groups of a single individual?
All right, Sam, let me ask Robert Callahan.
Well, certainly when we're talking about thousands of different units, I think there's going to be concern. And if you look at the scale of independent contractors in today's economy, like we cannot ignore the fact that a bargaining power like this that's going to be backed up very explicitly with legal consequences, as explained in the bill, is going to have an enormous impact. And really, we can't forget, like, why is there so much participation in this new economy? Why is it? And it's because workers are benefiting. I mean, they're more empowered than they've been in a very long time because of that incredible flexibility to work, you know, when, where, how, and for whom they want. Users love it because platforms have become incredibly user-friendly. There's cutting-edge technologies and convenience. Prices are good. Quality is high. And I think that needs to be the starting point of this conversation. We feel like the point of this bill, or the conclusion of this bill, is really making a gargantuan leap from the reality on the ground today, which is people are making ends meet by the income they're earning on the side through the internet economy, through the sharing economy, the gig economy, what have you, to sort of make this big leap towards allowing for organization on a very large scale could really upend and compromise a lot of these very successful business models that are providing so many benefits.
And Robert Callahan, yes, there are a lot of people who are joining the gig economy, but at the same time, there has also been this rise in lawsuits. I mean, Uber and Lyft are both facing lawsuits, or I guess Lyft settled its lawsuit, that where workers are asking to be classified as employees so they can push back against certain things that they feel like they don't have power over, like abrupt changes in rates and so forth that directly affect their incomes. So
right,
people are so happy, I guess I'm saying, why are there also so many lawsuits?
Well, so I think that's inevitable with any sort of phenomenon like we're seeing today. But again, these workers are empowered. They can vote with their feet. I mean, this is an environment that hasn't existed before when we're talking about the intense and fierce competition between platforms. There's a platform for everything for workers who want to provide their services to a broad audience. And so you can imagine, and we know that workers, you know, work for different platforms at the same time today, and that's very empowering. And if there's an ability to change and move around and work for different companies, whoever's sort of providing that environment that they appreciate the most, that hasn't existed before. And so, again, there's a lot of power that the workers have currently.
All right. Well, let's go to Patrick in Pleasanton. Hi, Patrick.
Hi there. I was wondering if the legislation would allow the workers to join existing major unions.
Good question.
Or if it's just totally separate. And as far as one more comment, as far as the workers empowered, I think that's ridiculous. The companies hold all the dice. And if the workers are truly feeling empowered, they would disregard the legislation because it's going to constrain them and it won't be an issue.
Lorena Gonzalez, workers, can they join unions?
You know, this is it's going to be a little different because, of course, to satisfy not dealing with federal preemption of the NLRA, which, you know, the National Labor Relations Act, which governs unions and says what could be unionized, independent contractors don't fit into that. And so we know, because we've done it in California, that if people are excluded from the NLRA, like farm workers are, for example, we know we can set up rules by which that they can collectively bargain. So we're looking at the way that ARB did it in California, which was to allow farm workers to unionize, and we're going a little different. So it wouldn't be an existing union, although existing unions have already started to put together worker associations to work on behalf, like they have in Seattle, these workers. So it wouldn't be directly with the Teamsters, but the Teamsters would have another organization by which that they're representing.
And do the Teamsters benefit?
Well, of course.
I mean,
if they're chosen as the agent or the bargaining agent for the workers, then yes, there's usually, you know, dues of some sort that are agreed upon between the workers and the entity, which, you know, could be controlled by or in conjunction with a labor union. It could be an attorney. It could be the workers themselves. There will be a lot of flexibility in this bill. You know, it's like having our chance to rewrite labor laws for the state of California. I was a former labor leader. I understand the positives and negatives of the existing labor laws. They're unfortunately been misused by employers to a point where where they're out of balance nationally. So what this seeks to do is provide kind of a new form by which workers really have the say with whom they want to contract as their agent and whether or not they even want to join a bargaining unit, as the caller suggested.
Well, Derek writes, I work for a food delivery company called DoorDash. This is my principal form of income, and it's only since working for them that I saw the complete lack of protections. When sick, I have no ability for sick leave, so I'm faced with the dilemma of working or making no income when sick. I also skipped a minor surgery procedure because it would have put me out of commission for up to 2 weeks. As someone who was used to working under normal working conditions and laws, my eyes have been opened to how serious the lack of work protections in this new app industry really is. Robert Callahan, what are the options in terms of having a flexible economy, but also giving workers some minimal level of security? What would you like to see?
Well, you know, I think this raises an important question, and frankly, we do want to thank the Assemblywoman for her conversations with us so far this year on this topic. I mean, these are important questions, and when part of thinking about the future and the future workforce, I mean, that's something that our innovation economy does exceedingly well. I mean, it's probably your first, second, third priority to be thinking about future needs of society. And I think we can't forget that today, this economy is providing for a wide, you know, majority of people a safety net that has not heretofore existed. There is this opportunity to make ends meet in addition to your income, or you can supplement through multiple providers, multiple platforms to try to make ends meet. Now, we want to have the conversation about making sure people are covered moving forward, like the letter writer mentioned their specific health concerns. But I think the answer is not jumping in, diving in legislatively with an organizing bill that could really upend what you have to, you know, sort of objectively acknowledge is the broad-ranging benefits of the new economy for workers, for consumers, for local economies, et cetera.
What about setting policy, though? I mean, could it be that workers could be entitled, say, to flexible benefits that they could carry from job to job? That's been something that's been proposed by some entities that work in this on-demand industry.
Sure, and I think that's definitely an interesting conversation, and one we're exploring as well. That's something that hasn't, you know, necessarily been possible in the past, just because of the way you would be interacting with the worker. But these are topics that are incredibly important, and ones that we're happy to have. And you know, again, when we look at the really broad ranging nature of this specific piece of legislation, we're most concerned about its, you know, potential negative consequences to really upend business models of all varieties throughout the state.
Well, Robert Callahan, thanks for joining us for the half hour. He's the California Executive Director of the Internet Association. And I also want to thank Lorena Gonzalez. She's an assemblywoman for the California State Assembly, a Democrat representing San Diego, and she's the one sponsoring the bill to allow collective bargaining for gig workers. Thank you, Assemblywoman Gonzalez.
Thank you.
Forum is talking about daylight saving time next in the next half hour, another bill that would do away with the ritual of adjusting our clocks twice a year. Stay with us for that. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum.